This is the Manufacturing Report. I'm Scott Paul. Today, Jeff Bonnier from AAM joins us again as part of a special two-week look at workers. Jeff has an established writing and voiceover career and has spoken to more steelworkers than I can even count. On last week's podcast, Jeff talked about some of the steelworkers he's met in Pennsylvania, Alabama, and Minnesota, and one trend that stuck out to me were the social consequences that these job losses have not only on communities, but on individuals and their families. Today, we're going to hear about some of the more positive aspects of manufacturing jobs and how, in many ways, they are one avenue to achieving the American dream. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you that you can find the Manufacturing Report on iTunes and SoundCloud. Also, please consider taking a moment to help us spread the word. Write a review of this podcast, rate us, and share it with a friend who you think would enjoy the Manufacturing Report. You can find us on Facebook at American Manufacturing. You can tweet us at Keep It Made in USA. And you can connect with us on our website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'd love to hear from you. Now, let's get started. Jeff, when you look at today's economy, there is a lot of discussion about service jobs being key to economic growth. But the jobs aren't comparable to factory jobs. Retail workers are making just a few dollars an hour. Is this the new working class? And where do manufacturing jobs fit in today's economy?
These steelworkers or the taconite guys, they make a good salary. They work a lot of overtime and can make six figures a year for their kind of work, yet they're still looked upon as the working class. Now, they feel they're middle class. I mean, it depends how you want to judge the different classes nowadays, but other people look down on them as working class. Well, that's fine. $100,000 a year, I'll gladly be working class.
If someone is charged with basically blowing a big hole in the ground and safely extracting something, I also want them to be well compensated, well trained, have a high degree of skills. But it's not something that, at least when you read the papers in this Northeast corridor, that a lot of people understand.
Oh, absolutely. It's everything is so urban today. And especially in the Iron Range, I mean, there's just nowhere to go. And they feel there's no way out. And, they're not going to try every trick in the book. They're going to, I can't pay my bills. Here's the keys to my house. That's the kind of people you find up there. And as far as drugs and alcohol, this is prevalent through every steel mill throughout the country. I mean, it's, with the number of layoffs over the years, it's just ruined a lot of families and divorces and lost houses. Things that, are hard to recover from, because when you... the average age in most steel mills is somewhere between maybe 50, 56. And when you lose your job that you've been at for 30 years and you get laid off, you're in a heap of trouble. Because, you haven't made it to your Social Security yet. You may not have your full pension. Some of the deals that they cut pensions to 50% or 25%. So it's a real struggle. I mean, it's hard to find anything comparable when you're, at that age.
Yeah, and oftentimes retraining for something that requires a completely different skill set, kind of maybe even different side of the brain, it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world or even possible.
Yes.
For someone who's at the twilight of their career rather than, say, in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah, they have the, trade assistance program for people who lost their jobs from foreign competition. And I've just talked to one after the other. I'm 56 years old. I'm going to go to school for 2 years. what am I going to do? You know, it's like I'm not going to get a job that's anywhere close to what I've been doing for the past 30 years. And some of them have gone to the trade TAA, and many have, you know, in desperation, signed up for the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program provided by the government, and they've finished the program and come out of it, and were still not able to find a job in their field because of their age. You know, guys have gone for accounting, HVAC work, and they just don't want to, you know, they don't want to hire a 57-year-old guy at that point. So you get this gap in there between your retirement, pension, Social Security, and it makes it tough to pay the bills.
So we've heard some stories about struggles, and certainly our concluding story today, Diane Miller, is one of struggle, but also of success. Diane's a retiree, but she built her life around a career as a steelworker. Tell us about Diane.
Well, Diane, she made a bit of history, I would say, working in the steel industry. And, you know, I'd like to emphasize that there have been thousands and thousands of steelworkers that have had wonderful careers and lived a great middle-class life and gone through it. Now, you know, it's certainly the industry has dropped off, and the trade has really hurt. So I don't want to make it seem all doom and gloom. And Diane Miller, she is sort of a unique story. In 1976, she was one of the first women to be hired at Allied Tube and Conduit Corporation in Philadelphia, which made pipe for fences, sprinkler system parts, and conduit pipe. And it's just funny that she had a girlfriend, she was with her girlfriend, and they met up with her girlfriend's brother, and he immediately blurted out, "Allied is hiring women today for the first time ever." And so they got all excited, and the brother worked second shift, so he took them in, and there was one woman there already. They hired her. They hired her girlfriend, and Diane likes to say she was the third woman hired there. And she faced different trials and tribulations, but she didn't have to fight equal pay, which we are still unbelievably fighting in the year 2017, because the union took care of her. Each job had a classification and a pay scale. And she continued to move up the ladder and work different departments. And when she retired, she was a crane operator, which is a pretty coveted job at a lot of the steel facilities. She did face a little discrimination, you know, from the men. This is 1976, and the certain things they may have said to her, and I love their quote. She said, "But I had to put them in their place." She was tough, and she could have retired at the age of 62 and a half and waited till 65 to retire after 38 years. And luckily she retired, maybe 6 months before they shut down the plant. So she likes to say that she was the first woman at the manufacturing plant to receive full benefits and pension upon her departure. She still gets full benefits and still gets full pension. And like many Northerners, Northeasterners, she is living the retirement life in Silver Springs, Florida, which is just adjacent to Ocala. She has two daughters. One's in Vegas. And when she was working, she took them to Disney World every year for 7 years in a row. They had money for vacations, the house. She put the girls through college. So it turned out a real success. She worked hard, long hours, but she said she loved it. And so it's a real success story, you know, especially for an African-American woman to go through all this and all, for almost 40 years.
The American dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it I think the value of a manufacturing job, particularly to a woman like Diane Miller, was that it gave her a pathway to have a middle class life.
Absolutely.
And to ensure that she won't be poor and retired, and that she can also take care of her family. Which is, I think, in America, something that all of us hope for. Do you think that women like Diane and men like Cliff and Calvin and Martin Edwards, do you think they're adequately valued by our society today?
I would say not, because, like I mentioned earlier, I mean, these are the people that make our country run. And, you know, the subway people, I mean, people we just sort of take for granted every day. And, you know, a steelworker may make as much as $100,000 a year, yet is considered working class as opposed to middle class. So I think people take a lot of this for granted, and of course they don't understand it.
Well, in a lot of ways, you know, whether you disagree with him or agree with him, you know, they many folks felt like their issues were at least discussed in the national election this last time.
Oh, absolutely. They, you know, and it was certainly evident by the vote, because these people had assumed they had been taken for granted for so long, and they wanted to see what changes could be made. I mean, unemployment has dropped tremendously under President Obama, but wages are stagnant, and, you know, and prices are higher, and people want more opportunities, in especially manufacturing. I mean, just all that we've lost to China from the furniture business in Southern Virginia, textiles, and certainly steel from several countries that is illegally dumping it here. And it continues to go from one business to the other. And It's costing a lot of jobs, you know. I mean, the medium income for poverty is $22,000 a year. I mean, hard to raise a family.
It is indeed. You can find the stories of Diane and Calvin and Cliff and Martin on our website, AmericanManufacturing.org/facesofsteel. Jeff, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with these great men and women, and also for the dozens of others that are profiled on our website. And thank you for joining the podcast today.
It's been my pleasure to speak with all of the working people of America, and a pleasure to be here with you today, Scott.
And we'll look forward to hearing about more conversations in the weeks and months ahead. And that will do it for the Manufacturing Report for this week. You can find the story of Diane and others on our website at AmericanManufacturing.org/facesofsteel. I want to thank the great teams at E18 and AAM, as well as Jeff Bonnier and the workers he spoke with, for making these podcasts possible. Thanks again for joining us, and see you next week. Together, we can keep it made in America.